We're here today with Paul Keel, ProPublica reporter who covers the fascinating world of high-cost lending. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you.
So, Paul, your latest story takes a look at a little-noticed corner of this world, the trend in which people who borrow money at a very high interest rate end up getting sued by lenders. Why did you find this so newsworthy?
Well, I think precisely because it is hidden. You know, I've been covering this stuff very closely for the last year, and I know when something completely floors me, it's going to floor other people by this point. The idea that not only do you take out a loan that's incredibly costly, but there are cases in these states that I write about that that means that that loan is always with you. Even if you default, they can go to court. It'll continue to grow at the high interest rate that you borrowed at. And, you know, in a number of cases I found, you'll never be free of it, even if you're making payments.
So you look very closely at the case of a woman named Nya Burks. And I thought it might be interesting for our listeners to hear about what happened to her. So I gather that she's somebody who went to a company called AmeriCash Loans, and she wanted to borrow $1,000 over 6 months, and they said, well, you're going to have to pay back $1,737. Now, what's the rate of interest on that?
It's a 240% annual rate.
And then, of course, it sounds like there are some fees on top of that.
Every time someone borrows money, there's a federal law that requires the lender to state the cost of that loan in a certain way. So the annual percentage rate, the APR, is the way that they kind of pile all the extra charges they put on the loan. There are important exceptions to that, but this is a case where it's pretty straightforward where this was the cost of that loan.
Now, as in so many of these cases, Nya Burks did not pay back $1,737 in 6 months at all. So what happened to her?
Right. She made a couple months of payments. Then she defaulted. And what happened after that is actually the lender waited a few months and then filed suit. During the time that the lender waited, the balance on the loan continued to grow according to that interest rate. So we start with the loan where she owes $1,700. By the time she's sued several months later, she owes over $4,000. And because of Missouri law has, you know, no limitation on what sort of interest rate you can attach to a judgment. So, you know, you go to court, you sue somebody. In this case, she showed up and said, yes, I owe this. The creditor said, okay, well, then you agree to pay this. And she said, yes. In Missouri, they reach what's called a judgment. The judgment continues to grow at the contract rate that's allowed in Missouri and a number of other states. This loan continued to grow at 240%. And a judgment allows a creditor to basically take the money if the person's not voluntarily making payments. That's what happened in her case. They have the power to go to her employer and say, give me a portion of her pay. The thing is that her debt was so large and the interest rate was so high that the small payments that she could afford to make did not effectively reduce, you know, the growing balance. So she's making payments, but the balance is not going down, it's going up. And this is a loan that was made in 2008. By the time, you know, I'm looking at this, late 2013, they're saying that she owes over $40,000, and they're still taking payments out of her paycheck. She's paid over $5,000 over the years.
So just to sort of keep the scorecard straight here, so she borrows $1,737. She ends up, over multiple years, paying back several times that sum.
Right.
And ends up owing $40,000.
And more importantly, she's going to be paying this for life, unless she declares bankruptcy.
Right, because by the time you get to $40,000, that 240% interest rate is going to, you know, you can hit millions in a few years, right, at the rate that's going.
Right, right. Yeah, it's effectively infinity at that point, right.
So in this particular case, you inquired with AmeriCash, and what happened?
Well, they didn't return any of my phone calls or emails. But in my emails to them, I laid out not only this case, but another case, not only what had happened, but some problems I found with the way that they had dealt with the case. They never got back to me, but when I was checking this week to go back, you know, and doing fact checks on certain things in the story, I looked at her case again, and lo and behold, there was what's called a satisfaction of judgment, which is basically a creditor saying, yeah, you've paid everything, you no longer owe us anything. Out of no explanation, nothing like that, just, you know, you're free to go now, essentially.
Now, Nya Burks, in one sense, did something that certainly would seem to entitle a company to pursue her. I mean, she borrowed money and promised to pay it back, and she didn't. So she's obviously has some responsibility for these events. So, you know, when you talk to advocates and so on, how would they suggest that a situation like this be addressed when a person borrows money and then defaults for whatever reason?
It's a good question. There are certain things that make, you know, a bad situation worse. So the things I focus on in the story are, first, lenders that obviously sue a lot, and to the point where I think it's pretty apparent it's part of their business model that we're going to give somebody money, we're not going to really make sure that they're going to be able to pay us back. But if they don't pay us back, we know they have a job. We know that we can go to court and get a portion of their wages. So that's one big issue that I think is highlighted. The other is, you know, what is a fair way to account for their debt? So in addition to this crazy situation where someone pays their loan over five times over, by that point, that person should be free of their obligation. But Missouri law allows creditors essentially to have people in what one judge called sort of indentured servitude. They have them as debtors for life. I don't think that's a rational way of dealing with this. In Missouri, that's probably the worst problem. In other states, there are certain rules that say you can charge all sorts of extra charges to the lawsuit. So for instance, you can pay someone a very large attorney fee for what is really just, filing forms, and that adds to the burden of the debtor. So there are certain, I think, practices that are pretty clearly not optimal, and if you're looking at a way to resolve somebody's debt.
These are, state-by-state laws. How in the world does a system like this, say in Missouri, come to be and stay the way it is? It seems to me it couldn't hardly be random chance.
Well, I think it's a result of this sort of patchwork of laws have worked out where, there's been this explosion of this type of lending just in the last really 20 years. And no one kind of sat down and said, okay, what's like a good comprehensive system for that? It's like one interest group gets a law passed and they never, go back to say, maybe we should make sure that if they do get a judgment against someone that it's not appreciating at this 200% or 400% or something like that. I should say that in other states they have done that. So there are states where a judgment only appreciates essentially at a little bit more, what is the going interest rate? So, right. Which is a more, I think, rational way to deal with it.
Well, that's the way courts typically handle this, right? I mean, if there is an appeal on a judgment, they might say you're going to put up a bond, but it's going to grow at the prevailing interest rate, which is 1% or 2%, not 400%.
Right. There are statutory interest rates that are sometimes around 9%, that kind of range, which you can argue is high, but is nothing like, 200% or 50%, which is very common in Missouri. So I think these types of loans present a special problem. And, on the other side of that is the constituency for debtors is not as clear and present as the constituency for creditors and creditors' attorneys who have a presence in state houses and can get laws passed that they like.
But it is true over the last few years that as more stories like yours have come to light, that we've seen some state legislatures try to crack down on this. We've seen a crackdown in payday lending in many states. Why does this problem persist? Do they just kind of reform themselves in some other way? How is this still out there as an issue?
I think what we talked about a little bit back in August with the story I did about, how these companies are changing the types of loans that they're making given the sort of pressure you're talking about. I mean, I think a big factor is they spend a lot of lobbying money. They spend a lot of money on campaign contributions. They do very well in state houses. In the cases where there has been something like a popular vote, like in states like Ohio and Arizona, they've lost, where you ask voters, do you think they should be able to charge interest rates like this? So they're much better making their case to lawmakers than they are to voters. That's one factor that they've stayed around. I mean, I should say we are in a point where I think things are shifting. One big factor is this new, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in the federal government that does have jurisdiction supervision of payday lenders, and they are in the process of formulating a kind of rule. They are not allowed to cap interest rates, but they are allowed to otherwise, make rules that affect how these loans are made. That's something that could lead to a very large, significant change, but I think that's going to be a process. The way federal rules go, they take time. So it's going to take time, but I think we are at a point where things are shifting.
Could you imagine, is it possible that a federal rule would address the problem you've written about in this story, the Nia Burke situation where somebody is essentially an indentured servant? Is that something that could be addressed?
It's kind of an interesting question. One thing I point to is sometimes this kind of stuff is in the contract. So I think they would have clear jurisdiction over that kind of thing. Where there's a state law that says you can charge whatever interest you want forever, I think that's a state law issue. Although I should say, even speaking to lenders in the course of doing this reporting, this is not something I think they would go to the mat for. So it's just sort of something that's been there in state law. No one has really talked about it, even though when I talked to judges, they were very eager to talk about it because they think it's outrageous. You know, hypothetically, should be able to be changed in the law, but, you know, you never know with state the way state capitals
Is there
work.
Any move afoot in Missouri to make any changes in this?
Well, we'll see, you know, hopefully soon.
Well, this story, of course, is appearing in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch as well as on our website, ProPublica.org. Paul Keel, thank you very much for staying on top of this issue. We look forward to seeing more.
Thanks.